We have a quorum, and second meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, January 16th, 2007. Would someone like to make a motion if they've reviewed the minutes from the last meeting?
Motion, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hoppe.
5 minutes.
And motion has been made that we approve the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes have been adopted. Today we're going to be hearing testimony and voting on a motion on the Great Lakes Compact, a very important piece of legislation, compact with eight Great Lakes states to protect a very valuable resource, which comprises about 20% of our of the world's clean water, fresh water supply. So we're going to be hearing today from the bill's author, Representative Tom Huntley, and I would like to move House File 110 and make motion that House File 110 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. With that, Representative Huntley, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm going to be fairly brief and turn it over to Kent Lacasmo, who is here from the Department of Natural Resources. But this bill involves at least 6 years' worth of work, primarily by the Great Lakes governors. About a year ago, a year and a month ago, they finally came to an agreement passed this compact, which would prevent any serious diversions of water out of the Great Lakes into other basins. That's its primary emphasis. This is very controversial in some areas. Kent has passed out a map, and if you look at Lake Michigan down in the south west tip, the boundary of the Great Lakes Basin is so narrow there you can't even see it on this map. So a diversion out of a basin, you're not talking about shipping our water to Phoenix. You're in the case of Michigan there, you're talking about transferring it by 10 or 15 miles into a different basin. So in some places it's very narrow. This, as I said, was done by the Council of Great Lakes Governors. That's eight governors. They also cooperated with the premiers of Ontario and Quebec that are also in the Great Lakes Basin. They have also agreed, but initially what we will do is pass this Great Lakes Compact, which by each of the eight states, then it will have to be approved by Congress. And at the same time, there'll be things going on between the United States and Canada to get their two provinces who have already signed this agreement. But it will take some federal laws in both countries to adopt that. I can tell you as the immediate past chair of the Great Lakes Commission, which represents the eight states and two provinces, that there's no end to problems over water in the Great Lakes area or across the whole northern border in this country. And they will continue to arise. What this compact does is address the serious problems of diversion out of the Great Lakes. And I urge you to support it. It's a compact, so it's not amenable to amendment. You either have to vote it up or vote it down, and I hope you vote it up. And with that, I'll turn it to over to Kent.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. Mr. Lacasmo, if you could identify yourself for the tape, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kent Lacasmo, I'm the Director of the Division of Waters for DNR. As Representative Huntley said, this has been a long process. Seven plus years. We started in probably 1999 with the annex agreement, which committed to developing a defensible compact. And this is an agreement between the eight states. The compact is essentially a contract between the states. Then there's also the two provinces. We have in the two provinces a parallel agreement that essentially does the same thing. But an agreement between the states and the provinces would be a treaty, and we can't do treaties, so that will be, we're just going to have these parallel agreements between the states and the provinces. Before I start going through the handout that I had, just wanted to say that Minnesota has a comprehensive water appropriation permit. We've had water appropriation permits since 1937. And our thresholds for requiring a permit are 10,000. If you use more than 10,000 gallons a day or 1 million gallons a year, you trip the need for a permit requirement. And the thresholds in this compact are much larger than that. 100,000 gallons a day for registration requirements and 5 million gallons of consumptive use for looking at consumptive uses. The diversions are a transfer outside of the watershed boundaries that you see on this map in front of you. And I can show another map that you also have in your packet, which is showing the Minnesota Lake Superior watershed boundary that's there. And the Rainy River, Hudson Bay is this portion, and you have the Mississippi River Basin on this side of this map, and then the Lake Superior Basin. What's important to note on this map is that you have some of these communities that go on both sides of the watershed divide. So sending water to Arizona is something everybody can quickly agree that we don't want to divert water, you know, out of state. When you get close to the watershed boundaries, there's a lot more room for debate and discussion. And we had lots of those discussions over the many years of negotiating this agreement. I know you have in your packet the House research summary of that. And just to be clear, in the very first sentence in the overview, it might be confusing. This is going to protect against large-scale diversions. This prohibits diversions of water outside of the basin. And the other thing that I would like to point out is on the second page, it says Minnesota's existing water conservation and permit laws are ahead of most of the other Great Lakes states. I would contend that we're ahead of all the other Great Lakes states. It's really surprising when you look at some of the other Great Lakes states and their existing programs. And you can imagine that negotiating something with eight different entities all having a different starting point was certainly a challenge. But we did get there. I looked at the chronology page that I had in here. The interest over diversions started in the mid-1980s when there was a proposal for a full slurry pipeline to Montana. And that started the Great Lakes states talking. They passed the Great Lakes Charter in 1985. That charter is a non-binding agreement between the states and provinces. So it was a good faith agreement. And that was pretty quickly followed in 1986 by federal legislation in the Water Resources Development Act that provided that any diversion out of the Great Lakes Basin would require the approval of all eight Great Lakes governors. And there aren't any standards or processes for review. There's no process for appealing decisions. At, recently, well, after 1998, when there was a proposal to take tanker loads of water out of the Lake Superior and ship them to Asia, there was a lot more interest in developing something that clearly was defensible and enforceable. So that started with a commitment by Governor Ventura, and it was to protect the Great Lakes. It was to be a durable, simple, efficient agreement, and it retains authority in the basin, so the authority is not going to federal government or other entities. What we have here is durable. I believe it would be durable and efficient. I'm not so sure it's simple any longer, but it is what we've negotiated through the process. Minnesota already has a regulation that deals with transfers out of the basin. We already have regulation that deals with consumptive uses. We already have a conservation and water emergency program. So Minnesota, by passing this, it doesn't result in the need for any new law or regulation in Minnesota. There are some other reporting requirements that are required. The agency already reports to the Great Lakes Commission water use, and so if you think that's an administrative fix, that's not a big fix either. As we work through this process, we did look at the straddling community issue. That's on this. You can see the communities that go on both sides of the watershed divide. So essentially, the compact prohibits diversions, but it allows for dealing with communities that are on both sides of the divide. It also provides that there's a grandfathering exception. So once the compact becomes effective, as of that date, existing uses are grandfathered in. So if there are uses that are in existence that are of concern, they would be grandfathered in under the terms that we're talking about. There is a structure that's created in this document to administer the compact. It's essentially the governors and premiers and/or their designees. And this is a relatively simple structure. It's not a whole new agency. It's not a whole level of government that's going to exist someplace that's going to take a lot of time and money and effort to support. We don't anticipate many proposals coming towards that committee. When we've asked the other states that have been involved in this, I think there were very few over the next decade that might even come under discussion. We've had numerous meetings throughout the development of this. There were public proposals put forward after the first draft. We'd received lots of comments, and this has been changed numerous times throughout the development process. All of the eight governors have changed during the course of this. Legislatures have changed. Designees on the on the working group have changed to some degree. So it's been there's been a learning curve up and down throughout this whole process. But the overall goal was to provide defensible protection for the Great Lakes, and I believe we've achieved that. There's from our perspective, there's no known opposition. We've met with the chamber. We've met with environmental groups. There's I think pretty much a consensus that this is a good bill that should move forward. We would recommend that it move forward. The governor's office has been involved with this, and like Representative Huntley said, it was in December of 2005 where they signed, the governor and premier signed an agreement to pursue the adoption of this compact into law in each of the states. And that's what this represents. And now I haven't gone through the actual the bill section by section. If anybody's interested in doing that, we certainly can. And with that, I would conclude my comments. I think two of the people that are following me are David Nasker and Pete Johnson. They're members of they're the Great Lakes Commission staff that we've been working with through these last Great Lakes. Yes, the Council of Great Lakes Governors staff. And they're the people that we've been working with over the last few years. And I take any questions anybody may have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lacasmo. Any questions for Mr. Lacasmo or Representative Huntley? Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask about you had indicated that Minnesota currently has in place the required conservation programs that it says implement conservation and efficiency programs, and you're saying that there would be no further action needed. Whatever we're currently doing is adequate to this compact.
Mr. Locke?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Briner. Yes, Minnesota right now has a emergency and conservation plans are required for municipalities of more than 1,000 population. And we're currently right now in the second generation of doing those plans, and they're looking at conservation for municipal, municipal uses, which may be industry if the municipality is providing water to industry. There's also in our existing permit rules that govern water appropriation, they're structured to limit wasteful water. We've in the past, as the legislature has eliminated the use of water for once through cooling of downtown businesses, and water use has changed from 11 billion gallons a year down to 2 over the last decade. And we don't allow use of groundwater for augmenting lakes. So there are actions that we've taken as a state to limit wasteful uses of water, and we believe that our regulations in the existing laws cover that. And we are currently working with the council and the other states and provinces to develop the conservation program that would be used under this. And so far it's pretty general and a broad umbrella. But I feel that we would fully comply with that.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you. And we have two other people testifying, Mr. David Navsker and Mr. Peter Johnson from the Council of Great Lakes Governors. If you'd come forward, please. State your name and your position for the tape, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'm David Navsker. I'm the Executive Director of the Council of Great Lakes Governors, and I'm joined today by my colleague, Peter Johnson, who is a Program Director with the Council. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today and talk with you about a very important piece of legislation for the region and for the Great Lakes. The Council of Great Lakes Governors, who we work with, is a nonpartisan partnership of the governors from each of the 8 Great Lakes states. And through the council, they work with one another to promote environmentally responsible economic growth. And toward that end, the governors asked, along with the premiers from Ontario and Quebec, for the council to facilitate a process that over the course of about 5 years led to the ultimate endorsement of the Great Lakes Compact, which is before you today. I would note the leadership of not only of the governors, including Governor Pawlenty, but also the leadership that was provided by the Department of Natural Resources staff throughout the course of the negotiations. Kent Lacusmo and Jim Japs of the DNR represented Minnesota throughout the several years of negotiations. I did submit a written document that has been shared with the committee. In the submission, it includes a background and an overview of some of the specific provisions of the compact. Talks about the importance of maintaining water management decision-making authority within the Great Lakes states and the provinces, and also some information about the development process, including opportunities for public participation, stakeholder engagement, and other means of consultation that were used during the development process. I'd like to just briefly talk about the momentum that has been building around implementation of the compact. 2006 was a bit of an unusual year with legislative calendars, the first half, of course, being focused on budgets and other issues, and then in the fall with the election cycles. As a result, most states had very short legislative schedules, and no state completed the ratification process. Nevertheless, very significant progress was made. Bills were introduced in 4 states, in New York, in Ohio, in Illinois, and in Michigan. And the bills passed legislative chambers in New York and Ohio, the State Assembly in New York, and the State House in Ohio. Unfortunately, because of the compressed legislative schedule, they weren't able to complete action before adjourning last year. But we do anticipate legislation to be reintroduced early this year in those states, and also for further action to take place in the other states as well. In Michigan in 2006, they adopted landmark water management legislation, and that should create a foundation for Michigan to go forward with the compact, and we do anticipate that the compact will be introduced early this year. The state of Wisconsin has been convening a special legislative committee over the course of the past 6 months and is looking to review and revise the entirety of their water management program in the state, and it's anticipated that a recommendation out of that committee will be coming forward in early 2007. Also, action is anticipated in Pennsylvania, where compact legislation is likely to be introduced this year. And the state of Indiana is undergoing a more comprehensive review of its program, and action is anticipated in coming months and years. In this state, there is a real opportunity for Minnesota to continue its legacy of regional Great Lakes leadership. The state of Minnesota should be commended for its implementation of the promises included in the Great Lakes Charter in 1985 and the program that's been conducted that Mr. Lacusmo spoke to a few moments ago. It's also a very important opportunity for the state to stimulate action by the other states and ultimately Congress, with the ultimate outcome being water management authority being retained in this region and the Great Lakes being protected. So this is a very important responsibility that you've been entrusted with, and a very historic opportunity to exercise leadership. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you, and would ask if Mr. Johnson has anything he'd like to add.
Just very brief to introduce myself. My name is Peter Johnson. I'm program director at the Council of Great Lakes Governors. I've been involved with the facilitation discussions since the beginning of this process. Anything I would say would be redundant to Mr. Nasker's comments, so I look forward to any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Nasker, any questions for either of these two gentlemen? Yes, Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just looking at some of the material here on the issue about the Commerce Clause. Oddly enough, this is I come from the solid waste area, and the Commerce Clause has been invoked to avoid the transfer of the blocking of transfers of municipal solid waste. But I wonder if you could explain a little bit what some of the potential pitfalls are with invoking the Commerce Clause on water here.
Mr. Natsker.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, in short, the federal government has the ability through its Commerce Clause powers to put forward legislation that would determine how decisions would be made over the Great Lakes. In 1986, they passed the Water Resources Development Act and conferred upon the governors the ability to effectively veto diversions outside of the watershed. What Congress giveth with that power, it can also taketh away. And one of the driving motivations throughout the process over the last 20 years has been the unified voice with which we have heard this region speak to say that those within this region ought to be the ones that make decisions about the Great Lakes. And indeed, this process has been encouraged by Congress, who in 2000, as it amended the Water Resources Development Act, directed the governors to work with the premiers to come up with a regional consensus about how future decisions would be made over the Great Lakes. Over the past several years, we've briefed members of Congress and their staff, and what they have asked for is a package that has been endorsed by the governors, affirmed by the state legislatures, and can then be enacted into both state and federal law, which this compact would achieve following the process the legislature is undergoing now, and then also what action would be anticipated by Congress in the future.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up.
So, Mr. Gardner.
It's still possible that until congressional action is taken, somebody could sue, for example, and say that the states are prohibiting the interstate commerce in water, and so this is a first step to sort of pile on to get Congress to take action to avoid that.
Mr. Nasker?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's exactly the issue. The Water Resources Development Act is replete with potential vulnerabilities, from the lack of a decision-making standard to the lack of due process, and legal experts have reviewed its provisions and have really used that as a call to action by the states to say we need stronger, more durable legal protections, and that was one of the references that Mr. Lacusmo was making as the driver for this entire process, to make sure that something is solid and sound and can withstand potential legal challenge.
Thank you. Any further questions? Okay. Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair, and I believe it would be, I'm sorry, I forgot your name. I just had it right here. Actually, either one of you would be fine. But my question is with regard to consumptive uses, and is there a broad, you know, definition, or maybe not so broad definition of some of those. I was reading over that in the information that you provided. I'm wondering about the possibility of consumptive uses such as, you know, bottled water kind of a situation where they might have a number of different facilities using just under the limit, and that water, of course, never returning or very unlikely returning to that watershed. Is that in, is it specified anywhere in your deliberations?
Mr. Natsker?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, thank you for the question. That was one of the most notable, most passionate issues that came up during the course of the negotiations was how to deal with bottled water. And we heard during the public comment processes on earlier drafts that on the one hand, some wanted to prohibit the bottling of water altogether. Others viewed it as a regulated food product that ought to be treated like soda, beer, or other products that contain water. The approach that was ultimately agreed upon in the compact is reflected in the definitions that are in the compact legislation that's before you, and also a provision related to bulk water transfers, as it's referred to in the legislation. In effect, the approach that is reflected in the legislation is that bottled water in a container larger than 5.7 gallons if it were to be taken outside of the Great Lakes Basin, would be prohibited as a bulk water transfer. In a container smaller than that size, it's at the discretion of the individual states how they may want to treat that. So it would be the prerogative of you and your colleagues to determine how that would be handled within Minnesota. The compact does not dictate how the individual state would deal with that issue.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you. And next we have Mr. Kurt Soderberg from the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District. Mr. Soderberg here? Okay, we'll move down.
I see him, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Next, then we have Ms. Allison Wolf from the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. If she could step forward, please. And I see we also have Mr. Gary Bocek, who's joining Ms. Wolf. If you could please identify yourselves and your positions for the tape, please.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Allison Wolf. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. I'm here today on behalf of MCEA and also on behalf of Minnesota Environmental Partnership. We brought this issue to MEP as a possible priority issue for the session, and MEP only wanted to have three issues, but they liked this so much that it became issue 3.5. So they did add it to their list. And that group, as most of you know, includes about 80-some environmental organizations in the state of Minnesota. So it has very strong support from our groups. And we urge you to pass Representative Huntley's bill so that Minnesota can move decisively forward to ratify the Great Lakes Compact. Minnesota has only 270 miles of Great Lakes shoreline, but we all feel a pretty strong kinship with the lake, I think. I bet everybody in the room or around the table has been to Lake Superior, I imagine. It's the largest, deepest, coldest of the Great Lakes, and it's so deep that it could swallow all the other Great Lakes, plus two more Lake Eries. So we have a resource right on our border. This vastness can make the lake seem invulnerable, but that would be misleading. We've all seen the news stories this summer and fall about the record low lake levels in Lake Superior. And I think that we can really see that vulnerability in that those low levels. I have read that 1 inch below the normal water level makes it necessary to reduce a freighter load by 270 tons to avoid scraping the bottom in the more shallow areas. So it has a significant environmental and economic impact when the levels go down. The water of the Great Lakes is at risk of being sold to the highest bidder in some cases. You've heard about some of the previous proposals, and more recently the Duluth paper reported about a proposal to put pipelines along the I-35 corridor. And the newspaper article indicated that it could possibly use, those pipelines might be used for gas, you know, natural gas transfer or for water. And it always sounds like science fiction, but this is just in last fall's Duluth Tribune talking about this very live proposal to have a broad corridor along I-35 from Duluth to Texas. Ideas like that really renew the sense of urgency to move forward with this, and we hope that you will do that today. We particularly endorse the features of the compact that provide environmental standards for the first time for judging new water withdrawals, and Mr. Lacazmo has talked about that. It bans water diversions from the basin with limited exceptions, and allows the region to retain control over this water. It creates a binding and enforceable compact and provides a minimum standard, which leaves the legislature in Minnesota free to provide more protective standards for the water. So it doesn't limit what the legislature can do in that sense. In conclusion, I would just encourage you to move forward and get us on the path to ratification of this compact, and I think it will be very exciting for Minnesota to be the very first state to ratify the Great Lakes Compact.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf. And Mr. Bozick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I am Gary Bozick. I am the executive director for the Minnesota Conservation Federation, and I'm also speaking on behalf of Audubon Society. I also represent them at this legislative session. I don't have much more to add. One thing we did provide for your packet is this two-sided fact sheet that indicates a couple of facts, and Allison's done a very good job of hitting most of them, so she took most of my speech, which is good. But one fact I wanted to mention is Minnesota Conservation Federation works, our national is the National Wildlife Federation. They have been actively involved in this process from the beginning. You see their reference on the contact page on page 2 of the National Wildlife Federation. They're wholeheartedly in favor of this legislation, are all the conservation and environmental organizations in Minnesota. Just a couple of, one other fact I wanted to mention, this is from Minneapolis Star Tribune in December, talk about the record lows, levels in Lake Superior, our favorite of the lakes, obviously. It's about a foot low, and Representative Huntley shaking his head, I think that's still accurate. A foot low, 1 inch of water alone, 71 billion cubic feet of water, enough to fill Lake Mille Lacs. That's 1 foot, so we're talking 12 feet. 12 Mille Lacs lakes have been, that Lake Superior is that low right now. So just think of the impact on, Allison mentioned on shipping, as far as the load that they can carry in and out of that system, but it also is affecting tourism, potentially. But also think about the cutting off of trout and salmon spawning beds, and some of these sandbars have run further out than they normally do, not permitting salmon and trout to get up to their normal historical spawning areas. So we've got trouble in River City, and it's right there in Duluth and along the North Shore. So this is a major step. It's a long step. It's a long process, and we would be very proud if Minnesota could get out in front of this parade and be the first state to ratify and encourage our neighbors to the east to do the same. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude, and we'll stand for any questions as well.
Thank you, Mr. Bozick. Any questions for Ms. Wolf or Mr. Bozick? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm not exactly sure who to ask this question of, but my question is, I noticed I got a couple questions. It relates to Illinois is noted as not being, in one of the documents it says is not going to be, what does it say, will not be applicable, their counties will not be applicable under the agreement. Is that because they already got a river going the wrong way, or is it because they don't drain in there? So my question is, how much water is it the Chicago River that's I guess we wouldn't want to dump it in there anymore, but it's going the wrong way. And is it the only river that is actually doing that, or the only body of water? And I guess Mr. Lacrishmo is the one that's going to answer that loaded question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, in the handout materials that you have on page seven, I looked at the diversions in and out of the basin. And the Chicago diversion is one that started in 1848, and it is authorized by a Supreme Court decree. So that diversion out of the basin is not covered by this compact. But there are other diversions that have occurred in Pleasant Prairie, which is in Wisconsin, in 1990, and Akron, Ohio. And both of these are communities that are half in, half out of the watershed, similar to what Chicago would be. Those are the three diversions out of the basin that have been approved. And there was a diversion outside of the basin for Lowell, Indiana, that was rejected through the veto authority that exists under the existing Water Resources Development Act.
Representative McNamara.
Just a quick follow-up. Mr. Lacrishmo, then, is the river, I know it looks like when you're in Chicago, it's moving pretty slow. Is it actually taking much water out? Where does it go? To the Mississippi then?
Mr. Lacrishmo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, there's essentially a lock at the edge of the lake, so you would, for any boat traffic, you lock through, because there could be a slight elevation difference, and then it flows through the Illinois River down to the Mississippi.
Representative McNamara.
And then is it a very large volume of water that actually moves?
Mr. Lacrishmo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative McNamara, the authorized diversion amount is 3,200 cubic feet per second. What happens for that, how that diversion actually occurs, it's the municipal water use for the city of Chicago. They take their water from Lake Michigan. It's used within the city, and the wastewater treatment for the city of Chicago is into the Illinois River, and thence it's discharged to the Mississippi River system. So there is some seepage through the controlling works. There is some losses for lockage through those works, but the bulk of this diversion is because of the municipal water use and their wastewater system discharging to the Illinois River.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chairman and Representative McNamara, just to follow up on that, this has also created another huge issue, but before I get to that, there happens to be two diversions in Canada that take water that should have gone into the Hudson Bay and puts it into the Great Lakes that almost balance what we lose in Chicago. So it came out pretty even, fortunately. That diversion from Great Lakes into the Illinois River, into the Mississippi, has now got the Great Lakes greatly concerned about Asian carp coming up the Mississippi, and are they going to get into the Great Lakes? And they're real close, but there is a barrier, an electronic barrier, in that river that is a constant fight with Congress to get them to keep that operating. But you start doing these diversions, unusual things happen. In this case, it could be Asian carp in the Great Lakes.
Any other questions? Representative Tinglestead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if we're going to be going through the bill here soon or what the process is for the next steps today.
Yeah. Representative Tinglestead, we will be voting on a motion to recommend that it pass and be referred to the Committee on Government Operations as soon as testimony has been finished and comments have been made.
Okay, so as far as Representative Huntley going through the bill, given the highlights of each of the articles or sections, is that planned as part of the process today?
Well, it's certainly, if we want to go through, I know that Mr. Lacrishmo said that he'd be willing to go through the highlights of the bill if he'd like to do that. So, certainly.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Lacrishmo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Article 1 is just the definition. It gives you a short title, Definition and Purposes. Carter? And I'm not sure how much detail you wish to go into on each section. If there's members that wish to have more clarification, let me know and I'll go back. Article 2 talks about the organization and how we will be implementing the terms of the compact through, and basically this is through a regional body that the Great Lakes St. Lawrence River Basin Water Resources Council is the official title, and that's made up of the governors and the premiers. They have designees that then would do the administration of any works that come before that body. Any first, it's getting the compact passed in each of the states. Following that, there may be proposals for diversions and or consumptive uses that come before before the body for review. So Article 2 deals with that organization. Article 3 is the general powers and duties, and this just talks generally on the breadth of the responsibilities of the council. And then Article 4 on page 10 gets to what specifically is in place for water management and regulation and what are some of the commitments for each state. The first section, 4.1, deals with water resources inventory, and that's something that actually the state currently does. We have a reporting system and we provide that information right now to the Great Lakes Commission, who's the repository for that. Section 4.2, the water conservation and efficiency programs. We have that in place in Minnesota also. 4.3 is the party powers and duties. This continues to go through those duties and what's required for a regional review.
Excuse me, Representative Tinglestad?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lockesmull, as you're going through this section here, the Article 4 about the water management regulations, I'm just wondering, you mentioned about one thing that Minnesota already has some stuff in place. Could you kind of characterize these regulations in here compared to what we currently have in Minnesota? Is it more restrictive, less restrictive? Where does it fall in that range?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tinglestad. Minnesota requires appropriation permits for any use of water, 10,000 gallons a day or 1 million gallons a year. And this agreement has a threshold for reporting of 100,000 gallons a day. And then it precludes or prohibits diversions out. And then for consumptive uses, the threshold is 5 million gallons a day. And that's 5 million gallons a day of consumptive use. So if you're only consuming part of the water, that's only the part that counts to get to that 5 million gallons. So this is substantially less restrictive than what Minnesota currently has.
Thank you.
The section 4.8 on page 16, line 16.24, is the actual prohibition. All newer increased diversions are prohibited except as provided. And the as provided are the exceptions to that, where I talked about the straddling communities, and there is a provision within a straddling county if there's something close by that there could be an argument made. And you'll see the terminology throughout this, all new or increased. So anything that's existing is grandfathered in, so this is new and increased from the effective date of the compact, which is, you know, some years down the road when all states adopt and Congress approves. Section 4.10 on page 19, lines 19.19, is where it starts talking about the management and regulation of the withdrawals and consumptive uses. These are uses within the state, so you're not crossing the watershed boundary, and it's the consumptive use portion, and this is these are much larger numbers than what we currently regulate in Minnesota. So this won't have an additional, we don't need to make any Minnesota law changes to comply with the terms of this compact. Section 4.11 on page 20 is the decision-making standard. This is the thing that's missing out of the WERDA language right now that's in federal law, because there is no standard. It's a very simple one-liner that says you have to get approval from all eight governors, but there's no standard. This provides a standard, so we believe that will be more defensible if challenged. The on page 22, section 22.24 is where we talk about the Illinois diversion and how this that process is excluded from this this agreement. Article 5 on page 24 talks about the tribal consultation. We have coordinated with the tribal interests both in Canada and the United States throughout this process. Article 6 talks about a public participation process. Article 7, dispute resolution and enforcement. And then Article 8, additional provisions talking about effects on any existing rights, where this does not limit or diminish any rights already established. And Article 9 then talks about the effective date and the process with each of the states and the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And that's a real quick run-through of the bill.
Thank you. Any further questions, Representative Tinglestad?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Loxmo, during my 10 years at the legislature, this is the first time I've been involved in compact legislation, so I'm not quite sure of how this all works. The way I understand it is virtually we can't make any changes to the legislation without it being considered a breach of the agreement. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tinglestad, the compact itself, this bill as drafted, would have to be passed exactly as drafted. If the legislature wished to add something else as additional amendments, that could be done, but none of the other states would have to do that. That would be up to us, and as we've discussed this bill, if there are any of those suggestions, we would prefer that those be handled as a separate bill and that this just be kept very clean in its existing format. And as far as compacts, you know, I haven't been involved with any of those in my career either. There was a compact, the Great Lakes Commission was created by a compact in the early
1955.
Well, before my time here, and that took quite a number of years to end up getting actually through the process. I believe it was close to 10. So this is somewhat unique for us also. And it is the way to get, when we had the 1985 charter, that was the good faith agreement, that some of the states followed through on that, some didn't. And they didn't because you had the 1986 federal law that gave them a veto authority, and they didn't feel compelled to go through and do the good faith agreement that preceded that. And that, you know, that's, quite frankly, for me, that's always been somewhat of a frustration. But this is something that would be defensible and would be a much better route to assure the protection of the Great Lakes.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Loxmo. Thank you for all your work on this and all the team that have worked on it. You did mention something about you'd met with various groups, and one of them was the Chamber, and I see that there's some Chamber folks here in the audience just wanting to get their either idea of support or not opposition on this.
How about a thumbs up or thumbs down?
Two thumbs up.
Two thumbs up.
Let's put it on the tape.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also want to thank everyone for their work on this. I've been at several national conferences where this has been discussed, and something that's heavily supported. I was wondering, what is the impact between, and you might have covered this while I was before I got here, but the impact on Canada with regard to the compact?
My understanding, this there's two things going on at the same time. One is this compact, which relates to the eight states, and then that would have to be approved by Congress and signed by the President. But there, at the same time, there are things going on between the United States and Canada to get the two provinces in line with this. And so, but that's a separate issue. But the two premiers have already agreed to this, and they have to also get it through their legislative process.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ross. Mr. Lockesmo.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Mr. Chairman and Representative Bosman, there is a parallel agreement that we have with the Canadian provinces, and I think before you got here, we talked about that a little bit. An agreement between the states and the provinces would be a treaty. So without going down that route, what we have is essentially the identical agreement that we have with them, and they're going through the federal processes on the Canadian side. And they are members of this, of the council, including the eight states and the two provinces.
Representative Osmond, do you have a further question?
I think they're going to finish it.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative David Nasker again with the Council of Great Lakes Governors. Just to build on what was said, it's a complex situation because of the international border. As Representative Huntley and Mr. Lockesmo alluded to, it's not possible for the provinces to become members of the compact. Because of that legal restriction, we have these two companion agreements. We have an agreement among the 10 parties, the eight states, Ontario and Quebec, which spells out the terms, the promises that the governors and premiers are making to one another about what will be done in their individual jurisdictions. In the United States, the interstate compact is the means by which those promises are going to be converted into law. In the provinces, they don't have anything analogous to the interstate compact mechanism. So they are going through a different process in Ontario and a separate process in Quebec, where they will be doing a comprehensive review, which is already underway, looking at their existing statutes, looking at their existing regulations to identify what may need to be amended in order to fully implement the terms of this agreement. The Quebec National Assembly has already taken a very significant step in formally approving the agreement, and now they need to follow on with other statutory and regulatory action. No federal legislation is required in Canada, though, to effectuate the agreement. This can all be done within the jurisdiction of the individual provinces. And we do have a mechanism called the regional body that the governors and premiers created in this 10-party agreement that's already working and ensuring that there's coordination every step of the way as these agreements take hold.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Nasker. Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Chair. I think that answers my question because I was had been told that the National Council is that Canada was cooperating, that the provinces were cooperating, and that we weren't going to put ourselves underneath some restriction that then they could not live up to and more or less take advantage of us. And it's my understanding is actually they're more concerned about restricting the use of water than many of our states have been, so I'm glad to hear that there's that seems to be work going forward.
Mr. Nasker.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, throughout the development process, in addition to the stakeholder engagement, there was also extensive consultations with the Canadian Consulate in Chicago, the Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade, and also with the State Department to ensure that everyone understood the legal arrangements that were being created and that there were no issues or problems that we needed to be aware of. As a matter of fact, in terms of the existing regime in Ontario and Quebec and under the Canadian federal laws, they already prohibit diversions. In Ontario, they also have a very well-developed water management program for use within the basin, so they may not have quite as far to go as some of our own states, and this was something that they were very key and instrumental in brokering.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Any further questions? Anyone from the audience? Representative Finkelstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I understand the motion is to go to the GovOps Committee, and then I'm assuming it'll come to Environment Finance at some point. Is that right?
I'm not sure where it's going to go to from there. One sec. Representative Wilgenes, would it come to Environment Finance?
don't see any reason at this point that it should.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Finkelstein.
Just a clarification. Page 7, line 18, it does say that the council shall annually adopt a budget for each fiscal year, and that those the budget will be apportioned equitably among the parties, so assume it's going to be some kind of a cost factor at some point.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Lockesman.
The amount of money that we're looking at for a budget for that regional body is about $5,000 per jurisdiction, and the agency will absorb that cost.
Thank you.
You have it on record. Thanks.
Much to my experience.
Any other questions? Anyone from the audience, either pro or con, would like to testify? Seeing no further questions or testimony, I would like to renew my motion that Representative Huntley's bill, House File 110, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
All right.
Thank you.
The bill prevails.
Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. House File 110 is recommended to pass and will be referred to the Government Operations Committee. Nice work to everyone who has worked on this compact. I think the unanimous support shows how good this compact was and what good job those who worked on it did. What we're going to be doing, I would also like you to note on the agenda here, there is an announcement. Bills that have been referred to the Game, Fish, and Forestry Division are going to be listed in the agenda. And there are three bills that have been listed here. And so check that out on the agenda. Those bills will be coming back through our committee once again at a later date. With that, we're going to be on Thursday. We're going to be hearing testimony from the Pollution Control Agency. They will be giving an overview of their responsibilities, and so we'll be hearing from them on Thursday. This meeting is adjourned.